Welcome, ladies and gentlemen, to another exciting episode of the Vinny Eastwood Show. My very special guest is Ed Opperman. Ed, welcome to the program.
Hey, Vinny, nice to meet you.
Yeah, nice to meet you too, brother. And you sent me a message only yesterday, Facebooking me, telling me how great you are about analysing certain things and whatnot. And I accidentally didn't copy paste the exact same thing, so I could actually read out the thing for the listeners. So, if you could divulge just a little bit about who you are and what you do, for my sake as well as the listeners, I'd be much obliged.
Okay, great. My name is Ed Opperman. I'm a private investigator. I'm the president of Opperman Investigations, which is based out of Colorado Springs, Colorado. And I'm also the president of Accurate Information Recovery, which is based out of Henderson, Nevada. And so as a PI, I do all the regular PI stuff, asset searches and background reports and all that kind of stuff. And as a digital forensic investigator, what I do is computer forensics, cell phone forensics. People will send me hard drives and computer cell phones, and I'll dump the data off the phone and create a report that we can use an exhibit in court.
Handy man to have around in a society where everything's recorded by the New World Order, I assume.
Yeah, it's good to have me around for sure. I think so.
And what's some of the things that you've been working on lately?
Well, this Wienergate thing, I'm kind of back involved in that just a bit. The first go-around with the Wienergate thing, I was sent a phone, and we examined one of the phones in the Wienergate thing to recover some of the chats going back and forth with Wiener and one of his women. And just in the second go-around, my agent is representing this girl, Sydney Leathers, who is the new girl who's exposing Wiener. So that's probably...
Whoa, hold on a second. Let me just see if I've got this straight. Leathers is exposing Wiener.
I know, it's too easy, right?
You can't make this stuff up, bro. Life is too freaking weird, isn't it?
I hear you.
And for those who are unaware, I think this actually kind of includes me. What is Wienergate?
Okay, that's right. Yeah, you're from New Zealand. Anthony Wiener was a congressman a couple of years ago, and what happened was he used to like to go on Twitter, and like a lot of guys do. You know, he goes on Twitter, he has a couple of drinks, right? He's a married guy, by the way. The woman he's married to is a real big shot in the Hillary Clinton campaign. She's a big aide to Hillary Clinton, and he was a senator. And he was texting back and forth and tweeting back and forth with women online, and even some half-naked pictures, you know. He's a big workout guy, goes to the gym a lot, so he's taking pictures of a bare chest, you know, in the mirror. And so he got, you know, that came to light, and he had to resign from the Congress. And now he's running for mayor of New York City, which you may be able to tell. I have some background in New York City. And this new woman came forth. He said he had stopped texting back and forth with these women, and he was working on his marriage. He even had a baby. But now it turns out that he was back involved with a couple more women and texting back and forth and doing all this kind of stuff. It's in the news again.
Yeah, yeah. Is it raining where you are?
No, it's not, no.
It's really strange. I hear this kind of like odd interference coming through the line here. I don't know what it is. But anyway... Is he still running for New York Congress? And what's the actual significance to this? Does it actually really matter? Is there some form of scumbaggery being exposed here? Or is it just another horny congressman?
Yeah, I think it's a horny congressman is what I think. And he's still running. He's not giving up. And you got to imagine what these New York papers, because they're real wise guys when it comes to these headlines. And look at this, Wiener that, you know, exposing Wiener. And her name is Leathers, so it even gets even better. I got to hand it to him. You know, the guy has courage to be going into these debates and stuff like that with all this baggage.
Yeah, debates with the masses. So it's the Wiener versus Leathers mass debates.
Yeah, there you go. Yeah.
Thank God. Well, you know, it couldn't be a more of a gift to the mainstream media, don't you think? Because they love to use really crappy puns, not unlike myself, in order to distract from real issues. And I was wondering, as a private investigator, are there any actual real, like, significant issues that you reckon maybe should be covered instead of this particular case?
Oh, boy, don't get me started. If you read my email I sent you, I was talking about the case I was involved with Sarah Palin and Todd Palin back in Alaska. And that was, you'd think this would be headline news every single day. Because my client, who was a prostitute in Alaska, her name was Shirley Tripp, and she was working out of an apartment in Alaska over there, and she had a little ad in the back of Craigslist. Are you familiar with Craigslist?
Oh, yeah.
Okay, so she was giving the massages with the happy ending from her apartment over there in Alaska, but one of her clients, according to her, was Todd Palin. And she also claimed that Todd Palin was sending clients over to her, and she would she would document the activity that went on between her and the clients and then report back to Todd Palin. So what happened was, is she's going along doing this stuff. She has a physically challenged child, you know. And one day there's a knock at the door. There's a flashbang. 30 cops come busting in to investigate this Craigslist massage parlor prostitution client, you know. And 30 cops come busting in. DHS with machine guns, the whole thing. They arrest her for prostitution, and they hold her there, and they say, listen, we want you to talk. We know that you're involved with these big politicians and important people. We want you to talk. But she kept her mouth shut, and what happened was she was arrested for prostitution in Anchorage, Alaska, and she tried to sell her story to the National Enquirer, and they bought the story. They offered her $50,000, and they gave her 5 polygraph examinations by retired FBI agents, and she passed every single one with flying colors. And then what happened was, it's kind of interesting, is that the police chief of the Anchorage Police Department issues a press release, and what he says is that, hey, we investigated this, all these accusations, everything that's in the National Enquirer, we investigated everything. We checked their computer, we checked their hard drive, we checked their cell phone, we checked their Rolodex, and there is no evidence of any involvement with Todd Palin.
Whenever somebody of officialdom says the words together, no evidence, it always to me thinks like, okay, then what are they trying to cover up here, bro?
Vinny, wait till you hear this, because the police chief comes back and he says, well, you know what? We never really investigated anything. And he actually says, as a matter of fact, we didn't even write that press release. Sarah Palin's attorney wrote the press release, and we just issued it on our letterhead. Now, hey. This should be front page news.
Hey, what can I say? You know, the media's controlled, and I really get sick of this stuff going down. You know what's going to happen, right? DHS and all these scumbaggery agencies of the New World Order that are operating inside the United States and want to destroy the United States, I could guarantee you, they've just got this information so that they can blackmail Sarah Palin into doing whatever they want.
I totally agree with you, and I believe that, you know, just about everybody in high places has some kind of dirt on them that's been dug up and it's held over their head, and that's why they do the bidding of these elites, whoever they are.
Isn't that interesting, how you can't get high up without being down and dirty first?
I agree with you, and they catch you when you're low up, you know, and they hold it over you, and it's in the back of your head always, you know, it's back there, you know they have it. And there's a couple of guys who I could think of specifically. I don't want to mention their names on.
Mm-hmm. Well, imagine what kind of a stress this might put on your daily life, knowing that at any moment, if you did something good for the people of the United States, you could have your entire career sabotaged and destroyed by the government.
Yeah, absolutely. And even, you know, if you look at the history of J. Edgar Hoover, the whole FBI was based on his files and blackmailing and all the dirt that he had on politicians and stuff.
Mm-hmm. And I think MK Ultra indeed experimented with LSD safe houses in New York in the 70s. But hey, it was the 70s.
in order to get dirt on Congress people, like they'd get them tripping and have them with agency-paid prostitutes and things like that, and they'd have double-sided glass so that they could take pictures of them while they were doing this kind of thing in order to blackmail them into doing whatever they wanted as well. So, you know, control of the... isn't it interesting, the control of the rulers, you know? Like, the rulers behind the rulers are the ones who can blackmail them. What kind of significant case does this really present? I mean, let's say the information really did come out. I mean, we're trying to put it out here now, but it's not going to become national news because the national news is controlled, and they don't want to put it out until it's an opportune moment, do they?
Absolutely, because a lot of what she told me was confirmed. As a matter of fact, the day we find... Oh, it was even more, because when some of the evidence, her hard drive and her computer and stuff like that, was released from the Anchorage Police Department, that same day that it reached my office was the same day that Sarah Palin announced on Sean Hannity that she wasn't going to run for president. But there was more evidence still being held over there at the Anchorage Police Department. There's only like 600 cops in the whole, you know, state of Alaska. You know, it's a small police department. But they were holding some more stuff. And we worked on this thing for like a year to get the rest of this stuff out. And they destroyed the evidence in defiance of a judge's order, of a court order we got. And they still destroyed the evidence. But what happened was this. This should be, like I said, this should be mainstream media news. Because what happened was, you remember Columbia, right? Obama goes down to Colombia, and the Secret Service agents in Colombia go down and visit the prostitute in Colombia, and they don't want to pay her. And it's a big, giant scandal. Remember that?
Oh, yeah, yeah.
Okay, well, Shaley Tripp, my client, she always used to say to me, she says, Ed, man, I hate cops. Because they come up there, they get a massage, they get a happy ending, they don't want to pay. Right? She says, I hate cops. They never want to pay. Now, as soon as this thing happened in Colombia and it started hitting the news, I get a call from Shaley Tripp. Hey, Ed. I know that Secret Service agent. I know him. She knew his name. She knew he was in Alaska. She knew everything. And she said he did the same thing to me. I took him over, he didn't pay me. Okay? And this escalated into a congressional investigation and a congressional hearing. I examined. We had documents. We had receipts and stuff that went. We did affidavits that went into this congressional investigation and hearing. Against the Secret Service to uncover additional misbehavior of the Secret Service. So a lot of what we've been saying all along was confirmed in a congressional hearing, and it's still not news. It's still covered up. It's blacked out. She wrote a book about this. Her name is Shaley Tripp, and it's on Amazon. And her book is called Boys Will Be Boys. But just look it up by the name Shaley Tripp. And she describes all of this, except for the congressional investigation, which happened later.
With this, I see a pattern here of sexuality in the higher levels, and I've heard, and I haven't had this 100% confirmed, that there's also a lot of gay prostitution and things like that being used to blackmail congressmen, and there's also a heavily involved occult element with this as well. Do you have any evidence to that effect?
No more personal evidence than anybody else in my business who investigates and researches these kind of things. But I would agree with you 100% that there is a lot of pedophilia and occult activity going on in high places. That's what I believe. And, Barney Frank was a congressman here. He was a very powerful Democratic congressman. And he lived, his boyfriend living in his home was running a gay escort service. Now, this was back in the 70s or the 80s. And then there was even a thing that happened in the Reagan White House where a bunch of gay escorts were paraded through the White House, given a tour of the White House. Did you know that?
No.
Oh, no. Yeah, those are widely reported stories that I could always go back for you and research and give you. I'll lay all that out for you. Those are widely reported stories that were reported in the Washington Post and the Washington Times back in the 70s and 80s. So there's a lot of that that goes on.
Especially at good old Bohemian Grove, apparently there's many gay porn stars and things of that nature that make their way in there to service the elite of the world.
I would totally agree with you. And if you look at some of the other cases I've been involved with, you know, like the Tiger Woods case, I did all the cell phones in the Tiger Woods case to document that these women who were coming forward had actually did have a relationship with Tiger Woods. And Tiger Woods, the golf star.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. Hey, do you know what the difference is between a Cadillac Escalade and a golf ball?
Go ahead.
Tiger Woods can drive a golf ball 400 yards.
Okay, pretty good, pretty good. Pretty good. Okay.
But if anybody remembers, Tiger Woods couldn't get his Cadillac Escalade more than a couple of yards from his house before crashing it into a tree. That's the joke.
Well, yeah, I get the joke. Well, the wife was chasing him with a golf club, and she broke the windows out, you know?
Yeah, I mean, isn't that poetic justice? You know, golf pro cheats on his missus, she chases him out with a golf club.
You can't make this stuff up.
I know. Hey, life is too freaking weird. I love it. Yeah. Okay, well, Ed Opperman is my guest, ladies and gentlemen. We'll be right back after the break at the VinnieEastwoodShow.com. It looks like we're going to have a very down and dirty show indeed. Back in just a few minutes. Don't you go anywhere. Welcome back, ladies and gentlemen. My very special guest is Ed Opperman, private investigator extraordinaire. And I was wondering, Ed, how did you get into being a private investigator? I know one other private investigator, Grace Hayden, and she was a police prosecuting sergeant for 15 years. Did you used to be a cop?
No. No, a couple of my ex-partners were cops, but I got started on the other end of the spectrum. When I grew up, I was a member of the Yippies. I was a Lower East Side political activist and a street protester, and Yippies, Abby Hoffman and those guys, and used to hang out at any Yippie headquarters. So I know that guy's part of the Jewish Defense League, and different guys, like a lot of skullduggery, a lot of guys that were informants and COINTELPRO guys. I was around a lot of stuff. So what happened was I became friends with a private investigator over in Brooklyn who did a lot of organized crime defense for organized crime cases. And what I did was I developed a source where I could get that, a source in the phone company. And I can get a copy of your phone bill. All I needed was your phone number. And I can get a copy of your phone bill, all the numbers you dialed out of your house. At the top of the thing had your name, address, and sometimes your social security number, sometimes your work phone number, and sometimes even your bank account number. So this was very valuable information back in 1980, back in, you know, I don't want to date myself. This is a long time ago, back in the 80s. So I quickly made a name for myself as an information broker, selling this information to lawyers and private investigators in New York City. And I was, you know, set up a camp in this PI's office there in Brooklyn. And he was involved in some of the biggest cases, organized crime cases of the time. And from my days with the Yippies, I had met a lot of the big civil rights attorneys, like Bill Consular and Jerry Lefcourt. So I just fell into this, but mostly for the defense, not in any kind of prosecution stuff. But I will work now if someone's being a victim of cyber stalking or things like that. I will work with local prosecutors and local police departments and to investigate that and help prepare a case.
What was your motivation?
to get into the PI business?
Yeah, I mean, did you feel like there was something wrong with your country and it needed you or something? But...
I felt that there was something wrong with my country when I was a young man in high school hanging out with the hippies in Lower East Side politics, demonstrating and struggling against the oppression of my country. But then I became 18, 19, 20, and then I needed to make a living. And this is a way for me to make a living. And the people who I had grown up around and made connections with were these kind of people. So I made these connections with private investigators and other kind of investigators. Like I said, down at Yippie headquarters, it was a real stream of people coming through there. People like Al Sharpton and the people from High Times Magazine, people from, just a wide variety of people coming through there that I made a lot of connections with.
Mm-hmm. I was wondering if you could kind of sort of tell me a story, you know, like your vision of the United States and what it really is nowadays from the private investigator point of view. Because if you've been in this for 20, 30 years or so, you must have seen and heard some really strange and horrific things.
Yes, I have. And I don't feel that our country is in a very good place. I'm not very optimistic on what's going on here in America, to tell you the truth. I know you have a humorous show, but it's the fact, you know. We can only, enjoy our day and then love the people around us. But we're living under serious oppression in this country and a serious police oppression and from our government and our military and the banks who run everything and are robbing us blind and basically treating us like slaves. And I've seen this gradually because you got to remember, how old are you, Benny?
28.
28. Okay, my goodness, my man. Okay, you got a long road ahead of you. Okay? Because when I was 18, 19 years old, we didn't have the internet. You couldn't look this stuff up. Okay? But I was hanging out down there at Yippie headquarters and WBAI radio in New York. And we had people like Mae Brussels coming down. And we had people like Bob Fass and Paul Krasner from The Realist. The way we got our information back in those days was from newspapers. Guys, like 20 guys would get together, try and raise up money, you'd buy a printing press, and you'd put out a newspaper like Yipster Times or Overthrow Magazine. And this is how we got out the word back in those days about the Trilateral Commission and about Bohemian Grove and these kind of things. Because back in those days, if you tried to tell people about it, they thought you were crazy.
Nothing's changed.
But at least now you could point them to something, and there's radio shows you could point them to. Back in those days, Trilateral Commissioning and Council on Foreign Relations was a huge conspiracy theory that no one believed.
Well, how did you find that kind of information out?
I was attracted to it. I guess I knew that something was wrong, and that and once I heard it, it just the ring of truth was just so correct to me. And then I was in touch with a lot of people who were the big. Leftists of the early, you know, of the 70s and the 80s, you know, who were fighting the good fight out there on the street back in New York. And just, you know, people like Paul Krasner and WBAI Radio and Bob Fass and these kind of things who were truth speakers back at the time.
Mm-hmm. And did you have some kind of a mentor?
Yeah, I did. I would say my mentor was a couple of guys, a couple of yippies who were... rough street fighters, a guy named Fred Gotbetter, another guy named Mario, who were rough and tumble street fighters in the struggle. And they taught me a lot, and both are dead now. One died of AIDS, and they both died. One died of drug abuse, and the other died of AIDS. And a lot of the guys back in those days are all gone or in jail. Even Dana Beale, who was the leader of the Yippies, and survived years and years and years. Now, just recently caught a bogus drug bust, a marijuana charge. And the guy's like 70 years old. And they got him in jail for like 5 years.
Mm. How does it feel to see those people who have really taught you so much and have such high quality to their character being oppressed in the way that they are on bogus charges?
How does it feel? Okay. Well, you know, it seems like everyone I know who struggled against oppression, who resisted against the government, had a rough life. Look at Abby Hoffman's suicide. You know, even guys like Bill Kunstler, who was such a, it was a civil rights attorney here in America, you know, real tough guy, you know, he wasn't afraid of the government, took on. And he was a guy who was both dealt with the radical protesters, and also later on I found out he was representing a lot of these organized crime guys in these other cases I was involved in. And it seems like if you're going to take this road, like Vinnie Eastwood does, and we're going to resist oppression, you're going to have a rough time. It's not going to be easy, but we can't give up. We have to resist. We cannot give up, and we have to struggle with every bone in our body. A good friend of mine, Douglas Dietrich, I'm sure you've had him on your show, okay?
A number of times,
Douglas
yeah.
Dietrich, right, he's exposing Satanism, you know, at the highest level, exposing a child abuse at the highest levels. And his personal life is under attack and under constant attack. So this is the life we've chosen, my friend. And this is what we're going to do. If we want to resist, we're going to face these kinds of things. But I think it's worth it in the end. And I think that we can win. I think we can win.
And in my opinion, it's not really much of a choice. It's like a lack of options. Once you know the truth, you don't. It's almost like a normal life, as many people would term it, no longer exists for people like us. It's like once you've been down the rabbit hole, you can't get out of Wonderland.
There are some people who can walk to Starbucks and step over a homeless man practically dying in the street, and there's some people who can't. And there's some people who can see a country dying and can just look the other way and turn on Paris Hilton, and there's some people who can't.
I was having a conversation with some of my listeners over the last couple of days. We had this big meeting about this thing called a GCSB bill. It's basically a government surveillance bureau here in New Zealand that has the NSA actually has offices in their building. So one can only really logically assume that they're merely a foreign branch of the NSA. And the bill's being passed, and it's about basically being able to spy on anybody, warrantless wiretaps, whatever they want. And as an activist, it dawns on you fairly quickly that not only is this legislation not being passed to protect anybody from any kind of criminal, but in fact to protect the government from any type of person who is an activist or a researcher who's exposing the government's criminal behavior. And to me, the most significant portion of this is to say, look, it's part of the New World Order agenda. And one of the arguments that I was having was with a girl who's saying that we don't need to or we shouldn't try and talk about the New World Order at this point because people aren't ready for it. And in my opinion, people will never be ready for it. I mean, I was not ready to hear about the New World Order when I heard about it. I went through a huge, massive, bout of depression and rage and so on and so forth when you realize that you're a slave and your country is being destroyed, right? And so the key here is something that the CIA figured out is repetition. Is that if you can repeat over and over and over again this particular type of information about the broader agenda, that's the only way you can actually really get it out there. And she says, oh, but it's not the right time. It's not the right time. And I go, when is the right time? Is the right time once you've been microchipped so that the bankers can just turn off your chip and you can't buy food? Is the right time when every single piece of information in the entire world that is ever released, whether it be by phone calls, emails, or internet database search, so that they can shove a Hellfire missile right down your throat through a drone strike? Is that when we should start resisting? Is that when we should start exposing the New World Order? That's BS. The time to resist, the time to expose the truth is, and always has been, right frickin' now. What are we waiting for?
I totally agree with you, brother. I totally agree with you. And, you know, I have a child. I have a 12... You know, a lot of these kids today, these 12-year-old, 13-year-old kids, they're aware of the Illuminati, you know? And they're aware of these symbolisms that we see all the time, like the all-seeing eye and these Illuminati symbolisms and stuff. And it concerns me because are they being desensitized to it? Like, are they being brought up in a life to say, well, the Illuminati control, the Illuminati, whatever we call them, the New World Order, whatever we want to call them, that we're all, that are we hurting them by teaching them that they're being, that basically we're all slaves, or will they grow up to resist? I don't know. With all the fluoride in our water and the TV on all the time and the radio and the music, all this hypnotizing us all the time, is there any hope for the new generation to break out of this? I don't know. I can tell you back in the 70s and the 80s, people, we lived a much freer life than we do today. Just in the United States, I think it's 25% of the public has some kind of an arrest record or probation or some kind of government authority hanging over them. And you really can't step out of line whatsoever here any longer. Without getting shut down. And I can't see, I don't know if it's going to get better or not, but we do need to keep resisting.
Well, I think it's just the point that you understand what the agenda of the New World Order is to destroy all freedom, all health, all medicine, all transparency, forever. You know? Forever. That's the future that we've got to look forward to if we do not resist. And people need to understand this very dark and terrible reality that you don't have a choice. I mean, and trust me, doing nothing is a choice, okay? Doing something on behalf of the New World Order, you know, facilitating its agenda in any way, shape, or form is a choice. Resisting is a choice. And the difficulty is, how do you know whether or not your resistance is being effective? And a lot of people start resisting, then they find out that life gets a heck of a lot harder, their finances get hit, their homes get raided. I've got a friend right now, Vince Seymour, who exposed massive judicial corruption within New Zealand, who's currently spending a 6-week stint in prison because he reported that a judge committed a crime. And he handed himself into the authorities willingly with a smile on his face because he knows that 6 weeks in prison is nothing compared to a corrupt judiciary that can send anybody to prison for any reason, for any length of time that they want. Mm. You know, it's kind of like sometimes you have to realize. Welcome back, ladies and gentlemen, to the Vinnie Eastwood Show. My very special guest is Ed Opperman, private investigator extraordinaire. And we were just talking over the break about how there's so many people like, what was his name, Al Sharpton?
Al Sharpton. A lot of guys in the States will know Al Sharpton. And he's a New York City guy who was a Reverend Al Sharpton. You know, and he's one of these guys back when I knew in high school, who was a good street protester, you know, carrying for the left and for civil rights, you know, for good causes. You know, he's right up there with Jesse Jackson and Martin Luther King, you know. And then, you know, as the years go by, there's a great story about Al Sharpton about how when he ran for president, his campaign was run by the same right-wing dirty tricksters who worked for Richard Nixon. Okay. So, and it's the same thing because they find out there's some kind of dirt in his background that they find out, and they can kind of put him up in high places and then manipulate him like a little puppet.
What I find is, and we just mentioned this over the break, is there's a lot of really talented people in the activist community who are radio show hosts, magazine editors or researchers, fighters in court and so on and so forth. And they don't pass on because of any particular scumbaggery. You know, they live rich and full lives and they get to expose copious quantities of things. But when they're gone, There doesn't seem to be anybody of the younger generation to come up and replace them and improve on what it was that they were trying to do. Have you ever noticed that? You know, like, is there? I don't know how many people you've known over your life who have just, you know, done really significant and amazing things in service to the community and the country, who when they die, there's no younger person to just pick up the mantle and pick up where they leave off, you know, this kind of thing. It's just everybody's just consumed with their own little petty squabbles now, and they don't really have even the opportunity, let alone the inclination that these elder patriots did. What is it? What has caused that? Why are people so apathetic nowadays that they don't want to or can't do what those in our past who have really inspired us and indeed really given us the fuel, the get-go out there? Why isn't anybody really improving on that? It just seems like we're still running to catch up with those in our past who were way ahead of their time.
Yeah, the younger guys do seem to be like a carbon copy and a poor copy of the older guys, the legends, you know. But one thing we do have is this internet radio now. It's a great form. It's much better than we had when we were coming up. Like, not only did we, to get the word out, we had to put these newspapers out, but we also used to make posters and go out in the middle of the night in New York City and with these posters and poster up on the wall with our conspiracy theories and our information and stuff like that. So we're way ahead of that. Okay, with these internet radio shows, we have this. But now what happens with this, though, is now how do they get us? The infighting between all the hosts and all the different stations, and the backbiting and the talking behind each other's back. You get someone on the phone right away, blah, 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 they want to talk about everybody else. Now, I grew up with this. I grew up with the original COINTELPRO stuff. I've seen it firsthand when I was in high school, coming out of high school, my early 20s. I saw the real COINTELPRO, and I saw how they divide people, and they divide and conquer.
It's really sad.
But now they have it to such a science.
Yeah.
They can whisper in people's ear and get people to work against each other and talk about each other behind each other's back and even on the radio. And it seems like anybody you try to ally with, create an alliance with, they're fighting with someone else you're trying to create an alliance with.
Well, didn't the Founding Fathers warn against entangled alliances?
I suppose they did.
And this is something that I believe the Patriot movement also needs to recognize. And I hear what you're saying. And in the background of talk radio, you would not believe the stuff that the Patriots tell me about each other, you know. And it comes to the point where even when they're correct, even when they're giving you actual evidence of truthers lying, manipulating, stealing, demonizing, and being full-on COINTELPRO, what occurs to me is that, you know, these are my heroes you're talking about. And you know what happens is you get really demotivated when you find out that the people you respect, the people who were your prime inspiration for fighting for truth and liberty, find out, you know, they just turn out to be something completely different to what your ideal was. And it really depresses you. And I think this might be part of it. This is part of the struggle that we go through every day, is not only do we recognize that there's this evil, you know, massive New World Order overarching agenda with goodness knows how many informants and agents and surveillance and such and blah, blah, blah. But also we're really fighting a war against the negatives of our human condition. And this entire society is almost adapted to bringing those negatives out.
Exactly. One of our weaknesses is our ego. Okay, everybody knows that. And the brainwashing, the constant brainwashing, is one of the things that they're constantly pounding into us, is to glorify ourselves and our ego and our sexual desires and our greed. These are the character traits that they're trying to build into us and build into our children, to be greedy, to be sexually perverse in every possible way. So I even have to examine myself constantly and say, how am I being brainwashed and how am I being manipulated and who's handling me? And because I've worked on some of the biggest news stories, 24-hour news stories in the past few years. The Tiger Woods case was a 24-hour news story. The Charlie Sheen case, where that I worked behind the scenes on that. My client was the woman he attacked in that hotel room in New York. These big major, the George Zimmerman case, I'm not familiar with that. So I've seen how there's a lot of behind-the-scenes manipulation by a small group in the media, in Hollywood and in the media, these agents and PR guys who can control everything going on in mainstream media. So it comes down, as a brainwashing that comes down through that and filters into us, our alternative media guys, that we're still manipulated by that. We can't help it. And we're still motivated by those same kind of things.
Mm. And what occurs to me as well is that the alternative media is very rarely breaking their own significant stories. What occurs to me is that most of the time what we're doing is looking at what the mainstream media reports and then deconstructing it and then reporting the truth side of it. But what I find significant about that phenomenon is that the mainstream media are still dictating what news we hear about. You know? We can only show people different sides of what the mainstream media isn't saying. And it's just... It's click whoring, basically. Right? And
they're driving the agenda. They're driving the agenda. They're driving the locomotive, and we're following along behind them. And what are we doing? Throwing little rocks at them, or whatever we're doing, bickering amongst ourselves while we do that. So you're right. We need to come up with our own ideas, our own proposals, and how to change the system and get these forward. And instead of just bickering about what they're coming forward with.
Well, the problem is we're trying to reach out to. I don't know. Well, hold on a second. I don't try to reach out to the general public, okay? I'm not trying to wake people up here with this radio show. The point of this radio show is not to cover the news and up-to-date kind of stuff. This is actually just to interview the activists and people of significance who we really should be listening to, people like you, yourself, not to put too fine a point on it, Ed. Because of the fact that we need to have a personal relationship with those who are delivering us information, I believe. We need to know who these people are. We need to know their backstories. And we need to know that they're just real people. And you get lost and you don't know who these real people are if all you're doing is reading significant major media pieces that they're doing all over the time and basically serving the general news agenda. And the reason why I'm not trying to wake people up is because there's many, many other people doing that. Okay, that's the reason why I use a lot of humor on this show, because it's not so much waking up that's my motivation. It's actually keeping people awake, because if you keep hearing all this conspiracy, all this propaganda, all this horrible stuff all around you, you get really depressed, you get really afraid, and it shuts you down. And that's my motivation, is to prevent people from shutting down through all the depression and the scumbaggery and the horrific things that they see and hear on a daily basis.
I agree with you, and humor is very important. And the hippies use humor, you know, and street theater and street performance art. These are the creative things that we need to be taking hold of and using as a weapon against the bigger weapon against this. We need to take the weapons that we have, the radio, our information, humor, art, street performance, these kind of things, and use it to overthrow the media that's pounding down on us all the time with this repetitive hypnotism that they're putting on us. About waking people up, okay, so many people in this movement who say, well, okay, I woke up to this, I woke up around 9/11 when they woke up. But you got two guys who think they're both awake, and they don't agree about anything. Okay, they don't believe this guy. They don't endorse this guy's a double agent. This guy's, you know. So how awake are we, man? You know, who knows? That's a whole other thing. But at least we know something's wrong, We all know something's wrong as long as we're moving in the right direction, because there's 310 million of us, okay, in the United States, and there's only a couple of million of them. We could go knock on their door and say,
"We'll be right back after the break at thevillainusofshow.com."